You're listening to KHOE 90.5 FM in Fairfield, Iowa, and the program today is What's New. And we have a special guest, Dr. Michael Olmsted, Dr. O, who you may have seen on campus. He's been very busy with the various developments on campus with the Ayurveda program, and he's working at the Indian Hills College. And he's got something very significant to tell us about the Indian Hills Community College Dental Hygiene Clinic. I think everyone will be interested to know about it. So can you tell us what you've been up to?
Yes, I'm the clinical instructor in the dental hygiene program, which is affiliated with the University of Iowa Dental School, and it trains dental hygienists, and there's also a school for dental assistants. Now, dental hygienists, as most everyone knows, are the people... largely ladies, but there's some men that are being enrolled that clean people's teeth and look after gum tissue health and all the supporting structures. And so it's recommended that we should have our teeth cleaned two, three, four times a year. Now, the beauty of this conversation is that the fee structure there, because it's an educational institution, and many of the people in the community have already come there to see me and the dental hygienists there in training, the fee structure there is incredibly low. For example, you can have your teeth cleaned, have full digital x-rays, have an examination by me for $50. You know, I mean, it's if you needed deep cleanings, that might add $30 or $40 to it. That comparable procedures would probably cost you $300 at least if you were, or more, if you were going to go to just a regular general dentist. And the quality is, you know, perfect.
So if somebody had a child, could they bring their children to have this kind of
Absolutely. Anybody in the community, and we need patients because it's an educational institution, and so we welcome you to come. So children, adults, there isn't any real restriction that way. And I'll give out the phone number here, and we'll give it out again at the end of the show. It's, of course, 641-683-5209. That's 641-683-5209. If you forget that, we'll give it out again, or you didn't write it down at the end of the program. And also, you can just call Indian Hills Community College Dental Hygiene Program, and they'll connect you.
Okay, so we'll come back to some more discussion on this a little bit later, and we'll see what kind of questions we can come up with that you can elaborate on. So what else are you doing in Fairfield at MUM?
Oh, there's always excitement in this community, huh? Everybody smiling when I say that, because there's always something new and fun. We just got back, Stella Vera, my wife and I, from Meru, and we took a special doctor's course on Maharishi Marma therapy. It was a week long, and there were 23 physicians, and it was really quite a special course. It was the first one that's been held just for healthcare practitioners of that level. And so my wife and I will be giving, already scheduling actually, Maharishi Marma therapy sessions in the Ayurveda clinic at the Peace Palace here. And also we'll be doing them at the Raj. We're the only two people in the United States that have been trained to do this. Now, there is a lady that's been trained, but she lives in Europe, and so she's just here sort of temporarily at the Raj. And I'll probably work when she's here. I won't be seeing patients there, or maybe I will. We'll divide it up in men and women. But at any rate, that will be available to people immediately, and that's a wonderful service.
So can you tell us a little bit what Marma therapy is?
Marma therapy is where we use very light touch, very gentle light touch on Marma points. Now, Marma is something that is in the Shushruta Samhita. It's like Charaka Samhita, but it's the one that is associated more with procedures and not just knowledge. And it's... we have Marma points on the body, and those Marma points connect nadis, and nadis are channels where there's energy flow in the body. And it's where the Marma point is where consciousness manifests in the body. and it's a very, very important part of Ayurveda. It was originally brought out by Maharishi back in the late 1980s and 1990s, and then he discontinued it, and then now it's been sort of resurrected again with an additional expansion of knowledge, and I've seen some pretty remarkable results from it.
I've had marmotherapy, and I remember you used oils.
Yes, there are certain oils, very specific oils that you use for very specific marma points. There's, 72,000 marma points in the body. We don't use all of them, obviously. Stan's chuckling here, because how would I be able to remember that? Take a lifetime. There's 107 that we focus on, and you can do them for physical maladies. You can do them for emotional releasing to get rid of, you know, emotions. There's a protocol called Let Go. You can do it for back problems, for scars. Scars interrupt the flow through the nadis and the marmas, and so scars are a big thing that is kind of initially treated in marma therapy.
So if someone came to see you, how long is a session?
Sessions are typically, the first session would probably be 45 minutes to an hour. After that, it might be a little shorter. There could be a sequence of sessions, maybe 2, 3, 4, depending upon the length of time and the different numbers of complaints that somebody might have, length of time they've had these maladies. But usually 45 minutes to an hour would be how long we'd spend with them.
So that program is getting off the ground now.
Yes, that's all. We've already booked patients, and so, that's all.
Now,
it's all established.
Has there been any research done on marma therapy?
There's research that's going on now, largely in Europe, that is clinical, and I've seen it, you know, being a clinician, I've seen where I've treated people and actually seen a scar on a physician. It was quite remarkable. I treated a scar on his forehead that he almost had died when he was a child, and it was, you know, not nice looking, and so I treated the scar. It was one of the first things I did, and I looked at him afterwards, and I thought, am I hallucinating? Is that scar not as profound and as obvious as it was? And everybody looked at it and said, no, it's much less, you know. And so it's a great modality, and I think that as time goes along, we'll get more and more research on it. But we don't want to withhold this in lieu of research, you know, because it's so non-invasive. We want to get people the benefit straight away, and I think that was Dr. Nader's intention when he endorsed this and started it.
Do you use pulse diagnosis with
you? You can use pulse diagnosis to further diagnose somebody's situation. For example, someone says, I've got back pain. That could be caused by a variety of things. It could be a physical situation that's material within that system, or it could be because of a digestive irregularity, or it could be kidney dysfunction or something like that. And so you can use pulse diagnosis, which I'm able to do, to further the diagnostic workup, and then that refines the treatment plan.
Well, you have a very interesting approach to all these various modalities that you're able to offer, and you have some information for us on research that's being done, primarily on new dental research?
Yeah, I'll maybe cover two areas if time will allow. Dental research that's current, I probably read two, three, four, five research articles a day. I enjoy it, and it keeps me very current on what's going on. And then we'll talk about maybe research that's coming out on just the body in general. Certainly not everything, but some of the big things that I've come across. And so dental research, for example, we're finding increasingly that fluoride is more and more ineffectual. Of course, it always was ineffectual, meaning it wasn't very effective. Research just came out that said fluoride varnishes, which are just like paint that's put on the surface of a tooth in adults and children, and it stays on for 20, 30 minutes because it's very sticky and has a high viscosity, just like paint would, with a very high concentration of fluoride. Well, it's been determined that this has little or no effect on dental decay. So, of course, that poses the question, why aren't we using it? Well, because we started it before we had the research as to its effectiveness, and so we now know that it's not really effective. Now, one thing I want to take a little step back, just to clarify, the fluoride, the water in Fairfield isn't fluoridated. There's no added fluoride, but it has a very high level of fluoride just in it from the aquifer and the well. It's all well water based. And so at some point, if it continues to rise, my suspicion is that they'll have to filter it out, because the Food and Drug Administration has now reduced the amount of fluoride that they will allow in water from 1 to 1.2 parts per million down to 0.7 parts per million. Now, that seems like a very small amount to start with, and I guess it is, but it's accumulative in the body. It gets in the long bones and can cause various problems, which you've talked about in previous shows. So this is a good thing that they're reducing that level. But the point is, topical fluoride doesn't do much.
When did they stop using fluoride in Fairfield? They used to.
I don't know if they added fluoride. I just know now that it's present in the water in a high enough concentration that they don't add any.
So you have use lasers in dental work?
Oh, lasers are becoming a very big thing.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, light therapy is mainstream now. You know, it's mainstream in that there's massive amounts of research on it. Low-level light laser therapy, LLLT, is used for wound healing. You don't have to give a person an anesthetic. There's no discomfort. You put it down in the gum tissue area or down in a tooth that's had needed a root canal, and you can eliminate bacteria. It's being used around implants, which is called peri-implantitis. Itis means inflammation. Implant, of course, is a synthetic tooth root that you put in the jaw. Everybody's heard about implants, and peri just means around. So sometimes implants can get an inflammation around them, and you can use a laser to kill the microorganisms that are causing the problem.
So how's the laser getting? You stick something in their mouth? And
well, yeah, you have a little wand that looks almost the size of a writing pen, mm-hmm. and it has a light on it, has a cable that's associated with a module, a console, and you can adjust the frequency that you want and get some incredible results. Wound healing, massive benefits for wound healing.
No wounds like you hit in the jaw or something?
Well, no, let's say somebody had surgery.
Oh.
They had gum surgery, and right after the surgery, you do this on the tissue, and you get accelerated healing. In sports, they've been using it for years. The All Blacks, you know, which are the rugby side in New Zealand, world champs, have for many, many years used it for wounds, this low-level laser therapy. So pulled muscles, torn muscles, things like that, when they take them back into the sports room as part of sports medicine.
Can you talk a little bit about implants? I know we talked about this before, but is there research on the effectiveness, the safety, the results of people who have had implants? Is there any danger in having them? Is it better to choose that than to have the tooth be empty?
Well, it's a complex thing. You know, there's so many variables involved with that. It's not something where you can just say one shoe fits all, so to speak. And I make this categorical generalized statement, but we'll try to answer as best we can. Implants are being refined all the time, not only in how they're placed, but how it's diagnosed. So, for example, if a person is a smoker, if a person has a suppressed immune system, if a person's got chronic disease, for example, hepatitis or HIV or something like that, then you probably would be a little bit reluctant to place implant. If a person's had osteoporosis medications, the bisphosphonates, which substitute phosphorus for calcium in the bone, the problem with that is the bone it can't heal if it's broken. So if you do surgery and you make a little hole in the bone and you put this implant in, it won't heal around there. So if someone's gone through the two to three-year protocol taking bisphosphonates for osteoporosis, which I do not support at all, never have, then that pretty much precludes them from having implants. Having said that, if the home care is good on an implant and the product that it is selected is selected properly for that application, they're very good.
You know, we shouldn't be so surprised that lasers or light, some kind of light therapy would be effective. I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah.
It makes total sense. Now, there's another area of research that I think is very interesting that you might say something about, and that's the difference between men and women, or boys and girls, and their microbiome.
Well, we have to be careful today with gender statements, don't we?
Okay.
So I'm walking on shaky ground. Having said that, research was conducted and shown that the salivary microbiome, and we'll spend a little time on microbiomes here. We have microbiomes in our pancreas, we have them in our gut, large intestine, we have them in our mouths. The oral cavity, the mouth, and the gut probably house the greatest number of microorganisms. And the oral biome is responsible for all kinds of good things, but if it becomes dysbiotic, meaning disease, dysbiotic, the wrong kind of bugs and the wrong number of them, then we can have problems, periodontal or gum disease or tooth decay. And it's been determined that women have a higher concentration of microorganisms, bacteria in the mouth. It can cause some of these disease processes higher than men. And it probably starts in childhood. And we don't really know why, we just know that it exists.
It's very interesting. So is there some other research that's been done that's interesting in general?
Yeah, some really interesting research in my mind. There's a product that has been included in hand washes and toothpaste called triclosan. Triclosan, T-R-I-C-L-O-S-A-N. The Food and Drug Administration, about 3 or 4 or 5 years ago, banned the use of it in hand washes, disinfectant hand soaps, because too much was being absorbed and we were starting to see high levels and liver issues associated with it. But they continue to use it in toothpastes. It kills bacteria, but the problem is now we have substantive research that it's linked to osteoporosis. Which nobody needs, especially not the folks of us that are getting more mature, and our bone density tends to be a little wavering when we get a little older for a variety of reasons, all of which are addressable. But so I would suggest if you're taking a conventional toothpaste to see if that substance is present in the dentifrice. I don't want to mention brand names here. It'll be obvious when you look at the label. I wouldn't use that toothpaste.
So they would put the name.
They have to put the name.
Triclosan.
Triclosan. They'll put the name in there. Yes.
Is there any likelihood that they're going to take that off the market in toothpaste also?
I think, you know, it's like the money, the follow the money routine.
That again.
I hate to sound cynical, but, you know, there's a lot of data to support that that's kind of what will make the ultimate decision. But now the cat's out of the bag and the research is there, and when the FDA banned it in hand washes because too much was being absorbed in the hands, now the hands are keratinized tissue, that's why we get calluses when we shovel in the garden and work out with weights, and so they're not as permeable, they don't absorb things as easily, but it was absorbing enough of it through the hands, which are very tough tissue. In the mouth, it's not keratinized tissue. There's a little bit, but mostly it's just mucosal tissue, and it's very permeable, and so it absorbs a lot of this stuff. So I would suspect, yes, it's going to be discontinued.
So it's actually worse, I would think, in toothpaste than it is in soap.
Absolutely. There's no question about it. If a person has angina pectoris, which just means they have an insufficient blood supply flow to the heart, they take nitroglycerin. And how do we take it? We take a tablet and we put it under our tongue, and instantaneously the coronary vessels and vessels in the rest of the body will dilate and give more blood flow, and then the heart pain, because of lack of oxygen, more blood flow to the heart has been corrected. So you can imagine B12 is that way. You can take B12 sublingually and get a much higher concentration in the bloodstream. So, yeah, the mouth is a very absorptive area, so we have to be careful what we put in it, huh?
And what's the vegetarian males and females have depleted iron stores?
Yes.
How do they replenish the iron?
Well, there's a specific, it's very interesting, great question. You asked the perfect question. There is several different kinds of iron that one can take. And typically, these days, iron is chelated.
What does that mean?
Chelated means it will be connected. It'll be connected to a protein, an amino acid.
Hmm.
And because when the amino acid is pulled into the cycle of digestion and assimilation and utilization, it pulls the iron along with it.
Yeah.
So it sort of supercharges the whole process of bioavailability, if you will. I hope I'm not throwing out terms here that are putting people to sleep. But the one supplement that you would use for iron for people that are vegan is bisglycerate, BIS-glycerate, and as everything is, it's available on Amazon Prime. I wish I had stock in Amazon Prime.
Tablet or what?
It's a capsule, yeah. You can probably get it in a tablet form. It's very inexpensive. Bisglycerate, it's iron bisglycerate.
Now, is this more prevalent in women than in men?
Yes, it is, until women go through a menopausal phase. And then it becomes kind of about balance. A lot of things equate out after women stop their menstrual cycle. You know, it's an avenue for getting rid of toxins. And so women catch up with this in a lot of maladies that men are suffering a little bit earlier. So we have to be very careful when we get a little older, because a lot of things that we were able to withstand when we're younger, we just can't.
Now, that particular information on the iron stores, does that relate to dental health?
There's not really any big relationship to dental health per se, but there are relations to other things. Very interestingly, you know, when you go down these rabbit holes and you read research, they'll make some little statement in the research article, and then you'll like, wow, that's interesting, and that'll set you off on a trail with four other research things. And one of the things is that a lot of people experience, particularly us that are, you know, a little bit more mature and wise and older, is that we have these kind of wandering limbs. We get ready to go to sleep, and it's not a muscle twitch. It's that a very abrupt jerk of the muscle, and it happens in our limbs, on our legs, sometimes in our arms. It's very common, and it's increasing, and there's an indication that it may be due to a lack of iron in certain cells in the brain.
In the brain.
Yeah.
So is this bisglycinate?
Bisglycerate.
Yes, is that something that a person could take?
A person could take. You just have to be a little. You have to be a little bit careful. You know, you can't just take things, even though you can buy them over the counter. You take it maybe for 30 to 60 days, and if the person finds that that it's starting to improve and help their situation, then you know they should probably go to their physician, because most people that have these symptoms, again, very common, becoming increasingly more prevalent in younger people. They're probably taking a conventional medication or have seen their physician. Their physician should be informed. In addition, we want to make sure that we don't have sort of the conventional pharmacological idea that one thing will be the silver bullet, right?
Right.
You've got one thing, and that's going to solve all my problems.
Now, how do we get more iron in food we eat?
Well, dried fruits are very good. Animal proteins are very good. They have a lot higher mineral content. Leafy greens are very good. Raisins, dates are good. Artichokes are good. It's something where we have to have a fair regularity to it to get it from a vegan kind of a diet. And that's why oftentimes people get in these sort of ruts. They have their dal and they have their rice and they have a few vegetables, and it elevates their blood sugar level. They have a meal, but it doesn't provide maybe as balanced a nutritional profile as they should have.
Minerals,
protein, so forth and so on. So we need to always go back and realize that the essence of health is balance, and if we're not getting it from a balanced nutritional and a varied nutritional diet, then we'll start to develop some of these deficiencies.
I'd like to go back to some of the research that's been done, specifically dental research. You were mentioning something about root canals and some of the products that are used.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that?
Well, it's fascinating because the thing that causes all the difficulties and concern with root canals is that even though a tooth is treated endodontically, there's still a bacterial colonization within the root canal itself, the main canal, or we have a bacteremia kind of immediately around that root canal treated tooth. So when we do a root canal, the nerve inside the hollow portion of the tooth has died, and we clean it all out and disinfect it. That disinfection only lasts for a short period of time because there are bacteria everywhere in the body. About 60 trillion of them in the body, actually. Okay. So that's quite a few. And so it very quickly they grow back into that area. And so we have to be careful what we fill them with. A study was done where they took the 8 most common sealers that were used inside root canal treated teeth, and only 2 of the 8 offered any antibacterial effect on the common bacteria that are found in root canals. So we're filling these teeth with something that doesn't usually have much of an antibacterial effect.
So you can have a mouthful of teeth and half of them are dead.
You could have, yes. Yeah, well, the endodontist would say they're not dead because you can still chew on them, they would say, and it's kind of, you know,
but
news speak or, you know, sleight of tongue. Basically, they would say they're non-vital. They don't have a nerve, but they're still anchored in the jawbone and they can still be serviceable.
Now, we have a health show on KHOE that Alan puts a lot of information in that. But we have this one lady from Australia. What's her name? Barbara O'Neill. And she tells us that rinsing your mouth out every morning with oil, there's oils in there, and it's squishing around and all that. And
oil pulling.
Oil pulling, yes.
Well, as anybody that's been in Ayurveda for any length of time, that oil pulling isn't something unique to the West. In a sense it is, but it was taken from Ayurveda. In Ayurveda it's called Gandusha. Gandusha uses sesame oil that's been cured, and you put it in the mouth, and you do certain things with it, which I can't really describe on the radio here. But recent research was just done on that, and I'm not even sure if I included it in here. I don't think I did. Yeah, I didn't, which is amazing. But we found out through research, very interesting, the most important rinse that's used in dentistry for maybe the last 30-35 years is called chlorhexidine. You need a prescription to use it. It's actually classified as an antibiotic, not a disinfectant. Mouth rinse. It stains teeth, so it's only used for short periods of time. It is effective to control the bacteria if you want to control an infection or prevent an infection after you've had gum surgery. So they decided, well, let's take oil pulling or Gandusha and let's compare it in terms of its effectiveness with this benchmark medication that has side effects. Well, what do we find out? It's absolutely equally as effective.
With no side effects.
With zero side effects, only good side effects, because sesame oil comes from sesame seeds, which have a high concentration of calcium in them. So there's a lot of benefit. Yeah, and so here we've got something that we can do that's just as effective as a conventional medication. There's no compromise in using something that's natural and Ayurvedic.
How about clove oil? Is there any research on clove oil?
Well, what you can do is you can take your sesame oil and you can supercharge it. You can amp it up, so to speak, by adding clove oil. You can add neem oil. You can add tea tree oil, melaleuca oil, because oils will mix with oils, and then you can make it even more as an herbal adjunct and make it even more effective.
So are those oils antibacterial?
They are
viral.
They're some of them are antiviral. The antibacterial certainly. And the interesting thing about these oils is they are selective. They don't necessarily hammer and kill the good bacteria. It's weird. I never could make any sense out of that, but that's the wisdom of nature.
So how prevalent is oil pulling in the dentistry industry? Today? Use it a lot.
It's become, you know, most of the change that's occurring in medicine these days, I have to say, is consumer driven. You go to the dentist and you say, "Hey, doc, what about oil pulling?" And the doc says, "Huh?" And then the next time somebody asks him, he's got an answer.
Yeah.
And so the consumers are driving, in a large extent, the economies of the world today. We're not accepting things the way we used to. We want smaller houses. We want non-toxic things. And so the more this topic comes up in the media, the more we ask our dental team about it, the more that this knowledge will be disseminated from the other direction, which is the healthcare providers.
Uh-huh.
Can you say something about the influence of drinking tea on the teeth?
Just read this article yesterday. There is a study that showed that all teas increase your risk of having dental erosion. Now, there's different kinds of things that happen on the gum tissue, many things, but two things are gum recession and then erosion of the tooth structure, which would be just like a river that's going through a canyon and it pulls some of the soil away, like the Grand Canyon. Eventually, after millions of years, it gets very deep. So we can lose the root surface of the tooth gradually because of abrasion from a toothbrush, because of acidity of saliva, and teas are very acidic. And so all teas will cause an increase in erosion in somebody's mouth. So there's two things that you can do. You can rinse out within 3 to 5 minutes after you finish the tea. The best way is not to sip tea all day. Is to have your cup of tea, rinse your mouth real quick, swallow. You reduce the acidity, and so you've reduced the chance of erosion. Interestingly, two teas, black tea, which is caffeinated, and green tea, which is caffeinated, all you can get ones that are much lower in caffeine. And most of the companies will include the caffeine concentration on the label these days because some of it is very high, and it'll actually get your heart pumping if you drink a lot of it. Have higher concentrations of dental fluoride, which may have some effect on reducing erosion on teeth.
Now, when you say all teas, you mean herbal teas too?
Yes.
Like peppermint tea?
Yes, all teas.
All teas.
All teas.
What about the teas that we put together with a little bit of these are Ayurvedic remedies with coriander and.
Well, those are spices. Fennel. I mean, it's terminology again, isn't it? What's a spice? What's an herb? You know, I mean, they're all effectively herbs. You know, I use coriander. It's an herb, but I'm using it as a spice. So, yeah, when you measure the pH of these things, especially when they've been dried and condensed in a dried format, they're usually fairly acidic in their pH, so we have to be careful.
So we've covered a lot of territory on the various dental research areas that you've been looking at, but you've been looking at other research.
Yeah.
What have you come up with?
I'm a research nerd, I guess you could say. Something that I really enjoy for some reason. I think it's because it clarifies things, and it particularly clarifies Ayurveda. So people come to me and they say, well, you know, this is great. It's been around for thousands of years, but, you know, we've done stupid things in the past, and now we're doing things differently. And is there any research? Every time I look at research on the efficacy of Ayurveda, any aspect of Ayurveda, every time I see research, and this is pretty much across the board, it substantiates the wisdom of it. And that's why I continue to be involved and why I'm going to be in the master's program and so forth, because it works.
Keep teaching in the master's program.
Well, I will be. I'm going to be taking the master's program. I'll be teaching in the bachelor's program.
I see.
So you mentioned, I see in your notes here, autism and children and the food they eat. Explain that a little bit. Why are dental people involved with that?
Well, because I not only do work with people's oral health, but I also do with systemic health, their overall health, because I see people ayurvedically, Marma therapy and ayurvedic consultations, and of course the mouth and the body are connected. And so it comes up very frequently. Someone says, I've got some dental problems, but there's some other systemic issue that's going on. So that's caused me to be more mindful of systemic research that's gone on, research in areas unrelated directly to the mouth.
Well, describe autism. What does that mean?
Autism is, it's more prominent in young males, male children, than in females. Right now, autism, according to governmental statistics, is less than 1 in 60 children has clinical autism, or that spectrum of different conditions that we call autism.
And how does one express autism?
They can act out with everything from very violent behavior, very dysfunctional, violent, spontaneous behavior, where they almost have to be institutionalized, to just maybe some cognitive dysfunction, learning disabilities like that. And it's on the increase. It's almost gone parabolic. And it's not because we're better at diagnostic work. It's because it's increasing. And one of the things we've been looking at is food additives. So I think the statistic that I just read was that 60% of the food that most Americans, now maybe that's not us, we're in a unique demographic. We eat fresh stuff. It's organic. It's all this. It's bio and all that. But for the rest of the population of the United States, 60% of the food they eat is processed.
They open up a can or a package.
They open up a can. It's been adulterated in some way. And even the organic foods that are packaged have had some sort of things done to them. So, but if you're taking conventional packaged foods that have preservatives, all these chemicals, coloring agents, flavoring agents, synthetic sweeteners, they have an impact on the prevalence of, at least this is the speculation at this point, of autism.
It's hard to educate the public about processed foods being bad for you. If you go into certain grocery stores and you look in somebody's basket, there it's just filled with processed food, and that's what they eat daily.
Yeah. You walk. It's a kind of a sad but fun game. You look at your cart. When you go to like Hy-Vee, and then you're standing in line, and you look at the cart of the people on each side of you, and they've got like a bag of apples and maybe some iceberg lettuce. That's pretty typical, and nothing else that's fresh.
No,
and we have like piles of vegetables and raw milk and blah 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 blah. And you look at that and you think, wow, and it's substantiated. I'll give you an example, a cute little story. I see a lot of people that are just from the general community of Ottumwa and around this southeastern Iowa area in the dental clinic that we talked about earlier. And one of the dental assistant students was having her teeth cleaned, and she said, well, I'm clenching and grinding my teeth at night. And so we started to go into a little diagnostic thing of why that could be happening. I said, do you eat excitatory foods, do you eat them late? She said, yes. And so most Americans eat 70% of their calories, not us maybe, 70% of their caloric intake after 7 o'clock at night.
Oh.
Now that ain't good. And so what happens is, she's busy digesting and it's exciting her nervous system and pitta's raised up and her sleep cycle's thrown off, and so she's clenching and it just makes everything kind of a mess.
So that can give someone a reason to understand why they're grinding their teeth that they might not have thought of.
Exactly. So she said, "Oh, I didn't know." That's the kicker on this story. I just about forgot the punchline. The punchline is she looked at me, a beautiful young lady, and an exerciser, and doing all these good things for herself. She says, "Oh, I had no idea."
Sure.
She had no idea. So the public doesn't know.
So this is an Ayurvedic principle to eat your largest meal during lunch rather than dinner.
10 to 2 when pitta is highest right there. And it's already been substantiated years ago by our gastroenterologist. It's old news, studies that show that your digestive enzyme levels and your hydrochloric acid levels are highest at that period, and they start to drop off. By 3 o'clock, you don't have too much left.
No. How does this relate to you walk into Walmart and see so many heavy people, fat people?
Big question. it's on the last page. That has to do with carbohydrate metabolism and AMA. Two different topics, but they're very much related. Carbohydrate metabolism, I'll do a very quick story. When we eat a carbohydrate meal, that could be sugars, it could be fruit sugars, it could be carrot juice, it could be rice, it could be dal, it could be grains, any of those things, breads, they can be organic, it doesn't matter, the body doesn't make much of a distinction, it's a carbohydrate or it's not a carbohydrate. So typically, in America, the bulk of our calories come from carbohydrates. They're inexpensive, they fill us up, they jack up our blood sugars, so we have energy to do the things we need to do. There's other ways to elevate and stabilize the blood sugar. Mm-hmm. So, to get that carbohydrate inside the cell into the mitochondria, which is the engine that produces ATP and ADP, which are chemicals that allow me to move my arms and swim and talk to you all and mow the lawn and think, I have to have these two chemicals, ATP, ADP. ADP. I need to get that carbohydrate into that cell, into the mitochondria. The only way I can get it in there is by what? Insulin. Mm-hmm. So if I'm going to go to the party and I want to go through the door to get, that would be the cell membrane, to get inside that place where there's a party, I've got to have a date, and my date is insulin. That's her name. So pretty soon, if we have an elevated blood sugar level, we've exhausted our ability to draw from our islets of Langerhans near our pancreas enough insulin. So we have a lot of rogue carbohydrate floating around the bloodstream. So the punchline is that carbohydrate turns into triglycerides. It turns into AMA because it's treated by the body as a foreign object that shouldn't be there. It increases inflammation and we get fat.
No.
It's not from eating fat. It's from eating carbohydrate.
Does that fat go to the organs, around the organs?
It can go around the organs, but more often than not, we'll see it because we get our little roll here. Yeah. We get it back here in the love handle area. We get it in our bums. We get it in our thighs. We get our dangly arms. We get our dangly chins. But you can get fatty organs, too.
So when you see young people with a soda pop in their hand walking through the store, they have no idea what they're doing. I mean, they're filling themselves up with sugar and
chemicals and sugar. They have no idea. And acidity, because it's got carbonation, it's got carbonic acid, and it's also got phosphoric acid to keep the carbonated water fizzy for a longer period of time. So they're extremely acidic. So synthetic sweeteners, carbohydrates, artificial colors and flavors, and it's acidic. So it's like the worst possible thing you could do.
Wow.
There's a word here, omnigenics.
Omnigenics, you're going to use the big words on me
big
now?
Big word, what is that? What's that mean?
Omnigenics, epigenetics, boy, I'll tell you, where are we going with all this stuff? So, genetics, everybody knows what genetics is. Inside our chromosomes, we've got genes, you know, made by Levi Strauss. That's supposed to be funny, but probably no one will laugh, but anyway. So, and the genes are supposed to control how we express ourselves. There's genetic expression. How tall I'm going to be, how much my skin's going to look this way or that way, how smart I'm going to be, blah, blah, blah. We now know that epigenetics, and we'll get to omnigenics in just a second, we now know that epigenetics actually supersedes genetics. It's more important because we can control gene expression. We can control it by what we eat, what we think, our behavior. For example, if a father is very angry and the child hasn't even been born yet. That child's going to be born, and they've done studies on this, with some behavioral issues. It happens generationally. It doesn't take 50 generations to manifest. It's instantaneous. It's so instantaneous that we can do epigenetics in our own bodies. That's the good news. That's not bad news. That means we can control everything, basically. Now, if we take it a step further and we say, okay, not only can we control it, but now we know that everything in the body is connected. Ayurveda tells us that way. Marma therapy tells us that way through the nadis we talked about earlier. Omnigenics says that a gene expression is not independent of one area or another. So the RNA or the protein doesn't work in isolation from RNA or DNA someplace else in the body. Everything is connected. So when you push one button, another button pops up.
So what's the difference between omnigenics and epigenetics?
Omnigenics just describes the fact that all of our genetics will manifest in an interconnectivity.
Because I have Dr. Schneider on faculty here. He talks about epigenetics, but I'm not sure in what context.
Yeah, epigenetics just means that we have control over how our genes display and manifest. And we didn't used to think that. We thought it was all set at birth. Oh, it's in my genes. My dad died early. My mom had no teeth.
Right.
So I'm going to be the same. And that's all bunk.
So a lot of this has to do with diet and about
your personal
attitude towards life.
Yeah, your attitude is huge. It's huge because that's the script. Thought precedes speaking. Speaking precedes action, usually. Thoughts are more fundamentally powerful. Maharishi has told us that, and scientists know it now too. And so with our thoughts, if we're running this stuff through our minds that, oh, I'm not good, I'm not good, I'm not good, I'm not good, or whatever that dialogue might be, of course it's going to manifest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So is there any other area of research that you have been investigating recently? That we didn't talk about that you
want to
say?
Something pretty cool. Just take a couple of seconds, and I'm going to talk about the biome. People hear about the biome a lot, and they say, "Oh, it's just because I'm going to take some, lactobacillus bacteria, and I'm all good." I want people to understand the scope of what this gut biome means. First of all, the gut biome, if you look at our bodies, if you take somebody and you just put them standing and they don't have no clothes on and they just them and their cells, there's nothing there but just that body. There are about 60 trillion cells. We used to think 100 trillion, but that's old news. The new data is about 60 trillion cells. 40 trillion of those cells are bacteria. And some research indicates that we have an equal number of viral bodies. Of the 20 trillion cells that are left, the bulk of those, the vast majority, are red blood cells. So when you look at me, and I look at you, I see lovely people, and they smile, and I smile back, and I tap them on the shoulder, and they're friends. But basically, I'm tapping a bacteria. And you're looking at a bacteria primarily. And so what we're finding is that these bacteria in the gut have, and we're just in our infancy with this. For example, 95% of your serotonin, that's your feel-good hormone, 95% of it is produced and housed in the gut, in the bacteria. 90% of your immune system comes from your gut.
So if you're healthy, it might mean that your gut is healthy.
It could mean that your gut is healthy, yes. And
if you're not healthy and you have immune deficiencies, it could be your gut.
We have to start with statistics and numbers like that. I mean, those are big numbers and pretty shocking statistics. We have to start with the gut biome. And, of course, Ayurveda is very big with that. We have Lassi. But there's other things that you can do if you've had conventional pharmacological agents, even if they haven't been antibiotics, they will disturb the gut biome. Glyphosate causes dysbiosis. We already know that. We've already seen the research. So it kills the good gut bacteria. And glyphosate, of course, is Roundup, and it's present. The studies now show 98% of the American people have glycosate levels in their body that are measurable.
So that's a pesticide?
It's a herbicide. It's an herbicide that's used. It's to kill the weeds and everything so that people have easier ways of harvesting their crops.
Do you foresee that being banned from...
Well, it's already being banned in many European countries. It's being banned in its use in many states. In some counties, it's being banned. In agriculture, the county has the ability to do that. I think it's imminent. Bayer bought Monsanto. Bayer drug company, Bayer Aspirin, which is a Swiss company, bought Monsanto.
German.
Is it? Well, there you go. I just saw that the offices in Switzerland when I was there. But at any rate, not such a good idea, because now they've got lawsuits against this, and people have won lawsuits. And once you win a lawsuit, then a precedent's been established in a common law state, and then the other 30,000 lawsuits that are there are just a question of time. So I think they're probably going to be too much pressure.
Well, this is good news.
Yeah,
I think so.
You look around territory where we live, in any direction, it's nothing but GMO cornfields and soybean fields. And it's just absolutely a monstrosity we have to live with.
Well, we're hoping the weather takes care of that.
Yeah,
more rain.
Yeah.
So before we go, let's go back to the dental clinic, and let's have that phone number so that people can call you and sign up for cleanings and all the other possible assistance that the clinic gives.
It's the Indian Hills Community College Dental Hygiene Clinic, and the number is 641-683-5209. 641-683-5209. And they can always just call Indian Hills and get the switchboard and say, I want the hygiene clinic. If they want to see me, I'm there Mondays, Thursdays, and Fridays.
So they could come and get an appointment, but they might not see you.
Well, if they say they want to see me, then they have to schedule those 3 days. Yeah, those are my 3 days.
So is the prices for your services listed someplace where people can see you?
Well, they can call and ask when they phone in. But, I mean, adult cleaning, including an exam and x-rays, is $50 to $80.
This is wonderful.
This is a tremendous service to this community, and that's why I'm making such a big deal out of it. I don't make any money at all on any of the things that I've said, and I don't make any money on this. I'm just one of the instructors to teach the students.
And the services that are provided? Or?
We provide dental sealants, tooth whitening, dental x-rays, tooth grinding appliances, if you grind your teeth nocturnally at night. Fluoride treatments if a person wanted fluoride or needed it. So quite a range of services.
But no one's going to have their tooth pulled or anything
like
that.
No, there's not any tooth extractions, and there's no fillings, but you would save so much money on this that you could apply those funds to those other procedures.
So this is preventative, basically.
Yes.
And where is bleach refill? What's that?
Oh, that's if you're going to have your teeth whitened and you have trays, then you can get a little refill of the whitening solution.
Is that a non-toxic procedure?
Relatively so. You have to be careful. There's some people that get carried away with it and, you know, put their trays in every time they're going out, you know, and you only want to do it for the protocol as described, and then maybe do a touch-up where you wear the tray once or twice every year, and then that's good enough.
And once again, can you give us some information on how people can contact you for Marmotherapy?
Yes. They would call the Ayurvedic facility. It's in the Peace Palace right across from campus, and its number is 641-472-7000. Extension 3406. So it's just the standard number for the switchboard, and then you do extension 3406, and you can always leave a message, and then they can get you scheduled.
Well, Dr. O, we want to thank you so much for being with us today and giving us all this information about the research you've been looking at and the kind of contribution you can give to the community, both at Indian Hills College, at the dental clinic, and also the pharmacotherapy program here right in town. And you've been listening to World Radio KHOE in Fairfield, Iowa, and thank you for listening.